Chapter 10, I have been here before. But when or how I cannot tell, I know the grass beyond the door, the sweet keen smell, the sighing sound, the lights around the shore. You have been mine before how long ago I may not know, but just when at that swallows saw your neck turned so, some veil did fall comma slash knew it all of your. Dante Gabriel Rossetti. Pedro entered the middle of a difficult lifetime. Sometimes the difficult ones offer the most opportunities to learn, opportunities to progress more quickly along our paths. Sometimes the relatively easy lifetimes offer fewer chances for advancement. They are times to rest. This was definitely not one of the easy ones. Immediately Pedro was angry, and he clenched his jaw tightly. They're making me go, and I do not want to. I do not wish that kind of life. Where are they making you go? I asked, looking for clarification. Into the priesthood, to be a monk. I do not want this. He said, insistently. He was silent for a moment, still angry. Then he began to explain. I am the youngest son. It is expected that I do this. But I do not want to leave her. We are in love, but if I go, someone else will have her, not me. I cannot bear that. I would die first. But he did not die. Instead, he became gradually resigned to the inevitable. He had to separate from his love. His heart was ripped out, but he continued to live anyway. Years passed. It is not so bad now. The life is peaceful. I am very attached to the abbot and I have chosen to stay with him. After more silence, a recognition. He is my brother. My brother. I know it is him. We are very close. I can see his eyes. Pedro had finally found his deceased brother. I knew that now his grief would begin to heal. The brothers had indeed been together before. And if before, they could be together again. More years passed. The abbot grew old. He will leave me soon, Pedro predicted. But we will be together again, in heaven. We have prayed for that. The abbot soon died, and Pedro grieved. He prayed and he meditated, and the time of his death approached. He had contracted tuberculosis and he was coughing. Breathing was difficult. His spiritual brothers stood around his bedside. I let him pass quickly to the other side. There was no need to suffer again. I learned about anger and forgiveness, he began, not even waiting for me to ask about the lessons of that lifetime. I learned that anger is foolish. It eats at the soul. My parents did what they thought best, for me and for them. They did not understand the intensity of my passions or that I had the right to determine the direction of my life, not they. They meant well, but they did not understand. They were ignorant. But I have been ignorant also. I have commandeered the lives of others. So how can I judge them or be angry with them when I have done the same? He was silent again, then resumed. This is why forgiveness is so important. We have all done those things for which we condemn others. If we want to be forgiven, we must forgive them. God forgives us. We should forgive, too. He was still reviewing the lessons. I would not have met the abbot if I had my way, he concluded. There is always compensation, always grace, always goodness, if we just look for it. If I had remained angry and bitter, if I had resented my life, I would have missed the love and the goodness that I found in the monastery. There were other, smaller lessons. I learned about the power of prayer and meditation, he added. He was silent again as he pondered the lessons and implications of that saintly life. Perhaps it was better to sacrifice romantic love, he conjectured, for the greater love of God and my brothers. I was not sure, and neither was he. Several hundred years later in Germany, Pedro's soul, in Magde, chose a very different path. The next step in Pedro's journey to find the meeting point between spiritual love and romantic love occurred immediately after his memory of the monk. I'm being pulled back to another life, he announced abruptly. I must go. Go ahead, I urged. What is happening? He was silent for a few moments. I'm lying on the ground, gravely wounded. There are soldiers nearby. They have pulled me over the ground and the rocks. I'm dying, he gasped. My head and my side hurt badly, he muttered in a thin voice. They are no longer interested in me. The rest of this poor man's story slowly emerged. When he stopped responding, the soldiers left. He could see them above him in their short leather uniforms and boots. They were not happy. They were having their fun, but they had not really meant to kill him. They were not sad. These people were not worth very much. All in all, an unsatisfying escapade. His daughter came to him, wailing and sobbing, and she softly cradled his head in her lap. She rocked rhythmically, and he could feel the life ebbing from his shattered body. His ribs must have been broken because there was a sharp pain with every breath. He tasted blood in his mouth. His strength was diminishing rapidly now. He tried to speak to his daughter but could not utter a word. A distant gurgling came from somewhere in the depths of his body. "I love you, father," he heard her say softly. He was too weak to answer. He loved her very much, this daughter. He would miss her beyond human endurance. His eyes closed for the last time, and the incredible pain disappeared. Somehow he could still see. He felt extremely light and free. He found himself looking down at his crumpled body, his head and shoulders resting limply in his daughter's lap. She was sobbing, completely unaware that he was now at peace, that the pain was gone. She was focusing only on his body, a body that no longer held him, rocking slowly back and forth. He could leave his family now, if he wanted. They would be all right. They only needed to remember that they would also leave their bodies when their time arrived. He became aware of a marvelous light, brighter and more beautiful than a thousand suns. Yet he could look directly at it. Someone in or near the light was beckoning to him. His grandmother. She looked so young, so radiant, so healthy. He desired to go to her, and instantly he was with her near the light. "It is good to see you again, my child," she thought, the words appearing in his consciousness. "It has been a long time." She hugged him in arms of spirit, and they walked together into the light. "Pedro's haunting story completely engrossed me. Moved by his grief at leaving his daughter, I could feel the profound sadness of his parting words. However, I rejoiced at the uplifting encounter with his grandmother. If I were not so overwhelmed by the emotions of the moment, which also evoked the tragic memory of my own son's death, perhaps my mind would have made the connection between Pedro and Elizabeth. I had heard the daughter's words before." As Miriam, Elizabeth had rocked back and forth on the bloody ground, cradling her dying father, and she had whispered the same lament. The stories were eerily similar. At that moment, not only was my view obscured by emotion, but several weeks and dozens of other patients had intervened since Elizabeth's recounting, thus dimming my awareness even more. The discovery of their entwined destinies would be delayed to a different day. My mind flashed back to the short life of my firstborn son, Adam. I think it was my mental picture of the grief of Pedro's daughter in that ancient life that precipitated this memory. Carol and I had rocked in each other's arms after the early morning phone call from the doctor at the hospital. Adam's life had ended at 23 days. Heroic open heart surgery could not save him. We cried, and we rocked. There was nothing else we could do at that moment. Our grief seemed overwhelming, beyond physical and mental endurance. Even breathing became difficult. It hurt to take a deep breath, and air was hard to come by, as if there were a constricting corset around our chests, a corset of grief, but with no ties to undo. With time the intensity and sharpness of our sadness slowly abated, but the hole in our hearts remained. We had Jordan, and we had Amy, and they are unique and special children, but they did not replace Adam. The passage of time did help. Like ripples in a pond after a heavy stone disturbs its peaceful surface, waves of grief spread slowly outward. Like the first waves which tightly encircled the stone, everything in our lives was connected to Adam. With time, new people and new experiences came into our lives. They were not as directly connected to Adam and to our pain. Ripples spreading ever outward. More new events, more new things, more new people. Breathing room. We could take deep breaths again. You never forget the hurt, but, as time passes, you can live around it. We met Adam again 10 years later in Miami. He talked to us through Catherine, the patient described in many lives, many masters, and our lives were never the same. After a decade of pain, We began to understand about the immortality of souls. Chapter 11. Many times man lives and dies between his two eternities, that of race and that of soul, and ancient Ireland knew it all. Whether man die in his bed or the rifle knocks him dead, a brief parting from those dear is the worst man has to fear. Though gravediggers' toil is long, sharp their spades, their muscles strong. They but thrust their buried men back in the human mind again. W.B. Yeats. Elizabeth sobbed softly as she sat in the familiar recliner. Her mascara was running in jagged lines away from her eyes. I gave her a tissue, and she dabbed absent-mindedly at her eyes as the black mascara lines gained speed in their descent toward her chin. She had just finished recounting a life as an Irish woman, a life that had ended peacefully and with much happiness. Yet the stark contrast to her current life, with its losses and despair, was causing her pain. And so she cried, despite the happy ending. These were tears of sadness, not of joy. The day's session had begun much less dramatically. Elizabeth had only recently regained the energy and self-confidence to enter into the relationship, this time a short-term encounter with an older man. Elizabeth was initially attracted to him because he had money and position. But there was no chemistry, at least not on her part. Her head urged her to settle, to accept that he was secure. He seemed to care for her quite a bit, and who else was there for her anyway? Elizabeth's heart said no. Do not settle. You do not love him, and without love, what is there? Her heart's argument finally won. He was pressing her to deepen the relationship, to have sex, to make commitments. Elizabeth decided to end it. She was relieved, sad to be lonely again, but not depressed. Overall, she was handling the end of this relationship very appropriately. And yet here she was, eyes red, nose stuffy, mascara running wildly. When we started the regression process, Elizabeth lapsed into a deep trance, and I took her back in time once again. This time she emerged in Ireland, several centuries ago. I'm very pretty, she commented immediately upon finding herself. I have dark hair and light blue eyes. I dress very plainly and wear no makeup or jewelry. As if I'm hiding. My skin is so white, like cream. Hiding from what? I inquired, following her lead. She was silent for a few moments, looking for the answer. From my husband. Yes, from him. Oh, he's a lout. He drinks too much, and he becomes violent. He's so selfish. I curse this marriage. Why did you choose him? I innocently asked. I did not choose him. I would never choose him. My parents chose him, and now they are dead. They are dead, but I still have to live with him. He is all I have now, she said, a fragile sadness joining the anger in her voice. Do you have any children? Does anyone else live with you? I asked. No. Her anger was subsiding, but the sadness was more evident now. I cannot. I had a miscarriage. There was a great deal of bleeding. And infection. They say I can't bear children. He is angry at me for that, too. He blames me for not bearing him sons. As if I wanted this. She was upset again. He hits me, she added, in a suddenly soft voice. He hits me as if I were a dog. I hate him for that. She stopped talking and tears formed in the corners of her eyes. He hits you? I echoed. Yes, she answered simply. I waited for more, but she was reluctant to elaborate. Where does he hit you? I pressed. On my back, my arms, my face. Everywhere. Can you stop him? At times. I used to hit back, but then he hurts me more. He drinks too much. The best thing I can do is accept the beating. Eventually he tires and stops. Until the next time. Look at him closely, I urged her. Look into his eyes. See if you recognize him as anyone in your current life. Elizabeth's eyes narrowed, and her brow furrowed, as if she were looking, even though her eyelids remained closed. I do know him. It's George. It's George. Good. You are back in that lifetime. The beatings have stopped. She had recognized the banker, George, with whom she had had a relationship a year and a half earlier. That relationship had ended when George became physically abusive. Patterns such as abusiveness can persist over many lifetimes if they are not recognized and broken. At some subconscious level, Elizabeth and George had remembered each other. They had come together once again, and he tried to resume the abuse. However, Elizabeth had learned an important lesson over the centuries. This time Elizabeth had the strength and self-respect to end their relationship soon after the abuse began. When past life origins are discovered, it is even easier to break destructive patterns. I looked over at Elizabeth. She was quiet. She seemed so sad and hopeless. I had enough information about her abusive husband, and I decided to move her ahead in time. I will count backward from 3 to 1 and tap you lightly on the forehead, I told her. As I do this, move ahead to the next significant event in this life. Let it come into complete focus in your mind as I count. See what happens to you. On the count of 1, she began to smile blissfully. I was glad there was a little light in this bleak life. He has died, thank God, and I am so happy, she gushed. I am with a man I love. He is so kind and gentle. He never hits me. We love each other. He's a very good man. We are happy together. Her blissful smile never faded. How did your husband die? I inquired. In a tavern, she answered, as her smile faded. He was killed in a fight. They tell me that he was stabbed in the chest with a long knife. It must have pierced his heart. They tell me blood was everywhere. I am not sad that he died, she continued. I would not have met John otherwise. John is a wonderful man. Her radiant smile had returned. Once again I pressed forward. Go ahead in time, I instructed, and see what happens to you and John. Go to the next significant event in your lives. She was silent, scanning the years. I am very weak. My heart is fluttering so, she gasped. I cannot catch my breath. She had progressed to the day of her death. Is John around? I asked. Oh, yes. He's sitting on the bed and holding my hand. He's very concerned, very attentive. He knows he's going to lose me. We are sad about this but happy that we lived so many good years together. She paused, remembering the scene with John at her bedside. Only Elizabeth's relationship with her beloved mother had approached this incredible level of love, joy, and intimacy she had shared with John. Look closely at John. Look at his face and in his eyes. See if you recognize him as someone in your present life. Recognition often immediately occurs with an unmistakable certainty when a patient looks into the other person's eyes. The eyes may truly be the window to the soul. No, she said simply. I do not know him. She paused again, then spoke with alarm in her voice. My heart is giving out, she declared. It's very erratic now. I feel like I want to leave this body now. It's okay. Leave that body. Tell me what happens to you. After a few moments, she began to describe the events following her death. Her face looked peaceful, her breathing relaxed. I am hovering above and to the side of my body, near the corner of the ceiling. I can see John sitting with my body. He's just sitting there. He doesn't want to move. He will be all alone now. We only had each other. Then you never had children? I asked, for clarification. No, I could not. But that was not important. We had each other, and that was enough for us. She lapsed back into silence, her face still very peaceful, a small smile forming. It is so beautiful here. I am aware of a beautiful light all around me. It pulls at me, and I want to follow it. It is a beautiful light. It restores you with energy. Go ahead, I agreed. We travel through a beautiful valley, with trees and flowers all around. I'm becoming aware of many things, much information, much knowledge. But I don't want to forget about John. I must remember John, and if I learn all these other things, I might forget John, and I can't. You will remember John, too, I advised, but I was not really sure. What was this other knowledge she was being given? I asked her. It is all about lifetimes and energies, about how we use our lifetime to perfect our energies so that we can move on to higher worlds. They are telling me about energy and about love and how these are the same. When we understand what love really is. But I do not want to forget about John. I will remind you all about John. Good. Is there more? No, that is all for now. Then she added, we can learn more about love by listening to our intuitions. Perhaps this last comment had more levels of meaning, especially for me. Years earlier the masters, speaking through Catherine, had told me at the very end of her sessions and their amazing revelations, what we tell you is for now. You must now learn through your own intuition. There would be no more revelations through Catherine's hypnosis. Elizabeth rested. There would be no further revelations today either. I awakened her, and after her mind reoriented to the present time, she began to cry softly. Why are you crying? I gently asked her. Because I loved him so much, and I don't think I will ever love someone that much again. I've never met any man that I could love like that, and who loved me back the same way. And without that love, how can my life ever be complete? How can I ever be completely happy? You never know, I objected, but without much conviction. You could meet someone and fall madly in love again. You could even meet John again, in another body. Sure, she said with some sarcasm. Her tears kept falling. You're just trying to make me feel better. I've got a better chance of winning the lottery than of finding him again. The odds of winning the lottery, I remembered, were 14,000,000 to 1. In Through Time into Healing, I describe the reunion of Ariel and Anthony. A reunion with a soulmate after a long and involuntary separation can be an experience worth waiting for, even if the wait is one of centuries. On a vacation in the Southwest, my former patient, Ariel, a biologist, met an Australian named Anthony. Both were emotionally mature individuals who had been married before, and they quickly fell in love and became engaged. Back in Miami, Ariel suggested that Anthony have a regression session with me just to see if he could have the experience and to see what came up. They were both curious to find out whether Ariel would appear in any way in Anthony's regression. Anthony turned out to be a superb regression subject. Almost instantly, he returned to a very vivid North African lifetime around the time of Hannibal, more than 2,000 years ago. In that lifetime, Anthony had been a member of a very advanced civilization. His particular tribe was fair-skinned, and they were gold smelters who had the ability to use liquid fire as a weapon by spreading it on the surface of rivers. Anthony was a young man in his mid-twenties in the midst of fighting a 40-day war with a neighboring, darker-skinned tribe that vastly outnumbered the defenders. Anthony's tribe had actually trained some of the members of the enemy tribe in the art of warfare, and one of the former trainees was leading the assault. 100,000 of the enemy tribe carrying swords and hatchets were crossing a large river on ropes as Anthony and his people spread liquid fire on their own river, hoping it would reach the attackers before the attackers reached the shore. To protect their women and children, the defending tribe put most of them on large boats with violet sails in the middle of a huge lake. Among this group was Anthony's young and beloved fiancée, who was perhaps 17 or 18 years old. However, the liquid fire suddenly burned out of control, and the boats caught fire. Most of the tribe's women and children perished in this tragic accident, including Anthony's fiancée, who was his great passion. This tragedy broke the morale of the warriors, and they were soon defeated. Anthony was one of the few who escaped the slaughter through brutal hand-to-hand fighting. Eventually, he escaped to a secret passageway that led to a warren of rooms underneath the large temple where the tribe's treasures were stored. There Anthony had found one other living person, his king. The king commanded Anthony to kill him, and Anthony, a loyal soldier, complied against his will. After the king's death, Anthony was all alone in the dark temple, where he used his time to write the history of his people on gold leaf and to seal the writing in large urns or jars. It was here that he eventually died of starvation and grief over the loss of his fiancée and his people. There was one more detail. His fiancée in that lifetime reincarnated as Ariel in this lifetime. The two of them reunited as lovers after 2,000 years. Finally, the long-postponed wedding would take place. Anthony and Ariel had only been separated for 1 hour when he stepped out of my office. But the power of their reunion was such that it was as though they had not seen each other for 2,000 years. Recently Ariel and Anthony were married. Their sudden and intense and seemingly coincidental meeting now has a new layer of meaning to them, and their already passionate relationship is now infused with a sense of continuous adventure. Anthony and Ariel plan to take a trip to North Africa to try and find the location of their past life together and to see what other details they can uncover. They know that whatever they find can and lie increase the adventure they find in each other. Chapter 12. Though I may not be a king in my future life, so much the better. I shall nevertheless live an active life and, on top of it, earn less in gratitude. Frederick the Great, he was perspiring profusely now, for the second time, despite the heavy air conditioning in my office. Sweat poured down his face, drenched his shirt, rolled down his neck. A moment ago he had shaking chills and his body shivered. But malaria could do that, alternating bone-chilling cold and inflaming heat. Francisco was dying from this dreaded disease, alone in thousands of miles from his loved ones. It was a terrible, painful way to die. Pedro had begun this office visit by drifting into a deeply relaxed, hypnotic state. He quickly went back through time and space, into a past lifetime, and immediately he began to sweat. I tried to dry his face with tissues, but it was like trying to stop a flood with one's hands. The sweat kept pouring down. I hoped that any physical discomfort caused by the drenching sweat would not affect the depth and intensity of his trance state. I'm a man. With black hair and tan skin, he gasped through the sweat. I am unloading a large wooden ship. Heavy cargo. It's boiling hot here. I see palm trees and flimsy wooden structures nearby. I'm a sailor. We are in the New World. Do you know the name? I inquired. Francisco. My name is Francisco. I am a sailor. I had meant the name of the place, but he had become aware of his name in that lifetime. Do you know the name of this place? I asked again. He paused for a moment, still sweating profusely. I don't see that, he answered. One of these accursed ports. There is gold here. In the jungle. Somewhere in the distant mountains. We will find it. I can keep some of what I find. This accursed place. Where are you from? I asked, looking for more details. Do you know where your home is? On the other side of the sea, he answered patiently. In Spain. Where we are from. He was including his fellow sailors, unloading a ship's cargo in the broiling sun. Do you have family in Spain? I inquired. My wife and my son are there. I miss them, but they are all right. Especially with the gold I send back. My mother and my sisters are there, too. It's not an easy life. I miss them greatly. I wanted to learn more about his family. I am going to take you back in time, I told him, back to your family in Spain, to the last time you were together, before this current journey to the New World. I will tap you on your forehead and count backward from 3 to 1. When I reach 1, you will be back in Spain with your family. You can remember everything. 3, 2, 1. Be there. Pedro's eyes were moving under closed lids as he scanned a scene. I can see my wife and my small son. We are sitting to eat. I see the wooden table and chairs. My mother is there also, he observed. Look into their faces, into their eyes, I instructed. See if you recognize them as anyone in your current life. I was concerned that shifting between lifetimes could be disorienting and might pop Pedro entirely out of Francisco's time. But he handled it smoothly. I recognize my son. He is my brother. Oh yes, he is Juan. How beautiful. He had found his brother before, as the abbot, when Pedro was a monk. Although we had never found them as lovers, Juan was an enduring soulmate for Pedro. Their soul connection was wonderfully close. He ignored his mother, focusing completely on his young wife. We love each other deeply, he commented. But I don't recognize her from this life. Our love is very strong. He was silent for a while, enjoying the memory of his young wife and the deep love that they had shared 400 or 500 years ago in a Spain so much different from today's. Would Pedro ever taste this kind of love? Did the soul of Francisco's wife also cross the centuries to be here again, and, if so, would they ever meet? I took Francisco back to the New World in the search for gold. Go back to the port, I instructed, where you have been unloading the ship. Now move ahead in time to the next significant event in that sailor's life. As I count backward from 3 to 1 and tap your forehead, let it all come into focus. The next significant event. 3, 2, 1. You are there.